ye woe, woe, looks a scream. Have him on my woe, 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 and he woe, woe, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Alexandra Terry. She is the curator of contemporary art at the New Mexico Museum of Art. She's also the guest curator of Labor of Love, a show on now at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University through April 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Alexandra.
Thank you for having me.
So you're just in Portland for a few days. You curated this show from a variety of artists that you'd worked with and you knew, and you put it on in New Mexico and you brought it to Portland.
No, it's actually original to JSMA. So I was invited by Mariana Ramirez, the director of Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art here, to do this exhibition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the kind of title piece of the show is also called Labor of Love. It's a really big piece. It's a woman cleaning a wall, and there's a big neon open sign with a couple of LED boards with the roses as sort of purple stucco background. She's cleaning kind of white smears and maybe polish off green tile and sort of leaning on a green neon railing. It's a big piece, probably what, 12 feet across. Tell us about the people who made it, Jalen Gomez and Patrick Martinez.
Yeah, so the exhibition aims to focus on hidden labor. So it's a group exhibition that features artists working in different material. But when I was first invited to curate the exhibition and Mariana and I discussed the artist Jalen Gomez, this was the first piece that came to mind. So it's a collaborative work between Patrick Martinez and Jalen Gomez, who don't normally collaborate, but they are peers and colleagues. And it's a piece that combines some really iconographic elements of each of their practices. So the cardboard cutout that you described is something that Jalen worked with a great deal early in her practice while she was working as a nanny for a family in Beverly Hills, California. She really recognized that the folks that she was working with every day, the domestic laborers, the folks who were taking care of the homes and the gardens, were not really depicted or credited or acknowledged. So she created a series of works where she depicted these individuals on sort of found cardboard, recycled cardboard, and would cut them out, placing them in front of the home to really try to give them a center and a focus. This particular cardboard cutout is actually Patrick Martinez's mother, who worked as a domestic laborer and a cleaner in a building in downtown LA for many years. And the process of that really took a toll on her body. The chemicals from the cleaning agents were very harmful and toxic, and the actual physical labor was incredibly hard on her body. So that's also a part of this exhibition, really acknowledging the unregulated labor that is taken on by many people who often are undocumented and can't afford to look for a job through sort of traditional avenues, end up really in compromised positions because of the work that they've had to do.
The cardboard cutout person is probably 4 or 5 feet tall. It's a rough cutout, thick cardboard. The body is all in black and it's kind of roughly painted. There are lots of gaps. You can see a earring and this short hair, but the face, the profile is kind of missing. You know, it's just a cheek. And then there's this thick arm with a yellow microfiber cloth that's cleaning the green tiles. As you come in, there's another piece, and it's a guy with a hedge trimmer mm-hmm. on a pink stucco wall. He's trimming a hedge. So that cardboard guy is from the same artist.
Yes, it's a collaboration between the two artists, and that one is a lot of Patrick Martinez's work is really indicative of Southern California culture. So that piece that you mentioned is a man on a ladder trimming a fuchsia bougainvillea, which is sort of ever-present throughout Southern California. So it's really important to both of these artists to recognize the individuals who we often drive past and just don't acknowledge. And this piece that we're standing in front of, Labor of Love, was really described by Patrick to be a love letter to his mother. And I wanted to use this not only as the titular piece, but as a major focus, because it was important for me throughout this exhibition to focus on the humanity of the labor that we're discussing. And throughout all of these practices, there's a great deal of compassion for the subjects, for the people who are doing the labor that has been hidden.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the scrolling LED boards that just show yellow and red roses?
So, right, they're placed on top of a wall that is tiled with two different types of tile, two different colors, and then a sort of stucco wall with portions that have been painted over. And Patrick, who grew up in East Los Angeles, really does a lot of work that kind of takes these vignettes from the streets of East LA. So in any city, as you're walking down the street, there are layers that you pass on telephone poles, on walls. There are flyers that have been ripped off. There's graffiti that's been covered. And what Patrick really aims to do is create these portraits of the streets in the city and restaurants. So the scrolling LED lights, they could be inside of a taqueria. They could be inside of a salon. You know, it's a sort of kind of iconography that uses this element of technology that's very pervasive. Again, something that we see everywhere and maybe don't recognize for the beauty, but he mimics the imagery from the scrolling LEDs on the wall with these roses. And so he's kind of saying, let's go back to what the actual object is. Let's look at the beauty of it, the beauty of the rose. On the LED panel, it's digitized, it's body, it's kind of alarming, but let's go back and really look at the beauty of the object.
So he made these sort of three-dimensional roses by hand that are stuck onto the stucco?
Exactly. So we have roses, and they look sort of, you know, if you were in a restaurant or in the lobby of a building, they would be misplaced. But I think it's important, you know, again, it's also alluding to the beauty of his mother and that freshness that was diminished by the work that she had to do. But going back to the tenderness and the love that he has for his mother.
Mm-hmm. Just at 90 degrees from that piece, Labor of Love, is a huge piece in four panels of gold letters. It's powder-coated steel. It's called The Names, and it's by a Iranian artist called Tanaz Farzi. So you can read these names. I can't. Who are they?
So this is a project that Tanaz took on she started a list of women living in and outside of Iran, primarily inside of Iran, who have contributed significantly, either culturally or politically, but because of the Islamic Republic, for religious reasons, for political reasons, and cultural reasons, these women have not been recognized. Not only have they not been recognized for their work, but many of them have been persecuted. So it is a list of women's names. Some of them are martyrs who have died for their political cause, and many of them are writers, there are artists, there are poets, and it's an ever-growing list. So this is an ongoing piece, and names new names come into the picture. So for example, the top name that we're looking at is the artist Monir Sharoudi Farman Famayan, who passed away not too long ago, but is a significant artist who gained global acclaim towards the end of her life. But really what Tanaz is trying to do is examine the intellectual labor that has gone unnoticed by these women because of the oppression of the female voice in this culture.
The style of letters is these little diamonds, you know, the little squares on rotated, and they're kind of connected by a thread, well, you know, another row of diamonds. And then there are connectors between them. It kind of looks like a circuit board holding everything together with the occasional flat panel. What's the significance of this square as a unit of building up a letter?
So what Tanoz has done here, and I should say that her practice in general really incorporates a lot of architectural elements, design elements from the Middle East, a lot of different geometric shapes and sort of almost mathematical properties. So what we have here are diamonds, and really they're the diamonds that are formed when you put a calligraphy pen down onto paper. It creates that first mark as a diamond, and actually has been used, those individual shapes have been used for counting historically. So she created a typeface, if you will, composed of all of these diamonds that come together. And there's something fascinating about the fact that you can't quite read the names of the women, because it really speaks to our disconnection from them and the fact that their names have... many folks have tried to erase their names from, you know, contemporary society and also historically. They don't, you know, these people want to wipe the names away. So it's important that they're there, but there's also something that's important about the fact that they're almost illegible.
Mm-hmm. These people, have they sometimes had to work in secret or just hide what they do?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, but I think what's important to Tanoz is that most of these people have been so outspoken, and it takes so much for them to speak up, and they are putting their life on the line. I've worked for 8 years with an Iranian arts organization, and I worked with many Iranian artists inside the country, and it's kind of hard for us to imagine in this country the type of censorship that these individuals undergo. So they do not have freedom of speech. They do not have the ability, as many of the other artists in this show, to depict whatever they would like to, and to depict the whole picture. So many artists have had to kind of codify their work, create systems for understanding these pieces that are not completely explicit, otherwise they would be in trouble. And many of these people have been in prison, which is a very dangerous place to be in Iran, because often you don't leave prison alive.
The same artist has a couple of pieces on the main floor. There's a gold cylinder with a photo on it, and then there's a kind of a gold frame with papers hanging from it.
So the sculptural piece that you just described, the frame, takes its shape from the Topkapi scrolls. So again, going back to Tanoz's interest in architecture and design, so the Topkapi scrolls basically contain these designs that could be used for the buildings
oh.
and inside of mosques and the like. So what she's done is taken a design, and then, as you said, there are these papers on top. It's actually vellum, and what has been printed on them are all the sanctions that the United States government has placed on Iran all the way up until January 2024. And she mentioned in a talk we did last night that there are actually quite a few more sanctions that have been written in the last few months because of the turmoil that's happening. So she has crumpled the vellum and then put them back together. So she's really put her own mark, her own hand on these, these sort of sanction policies. And then paper-clipped on top of them are images of the faces of individuals who have been martyrs and have been involved in the women life freedom movement. So when I was here in the spring doing studio visits, I went to Tanoz's studio in Eugene. She's a professor at University of Oregon, and she was just starting to work on this piece. And at that time, the Women Life Freedom movement was very much at the forefront of many of our conversations. So it has a lot of similar aims as the names, the piece that we just spoke about, but takes on a very different structure.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Alexandra Terry. She's the curator of contemporary art at the New Mexico Museum of Art. And she's the guest curator of Labor of Love, a show on now at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University through April 27th. Narciso Martinez was a field worker at one point and now is an artist and takes cardboard boxes from like produce boxes, flattens them, paints on them, and depicts field workers. So there's this fantastic one with someone, I think it's a woman, someone in jeans, sneakers, hoodie, with that baseball cap and the face covering for the dust and the sun. And this person, I think, is pulling, what is that?
Looks like asparagus.
Right, that's the logo on the box.
Exactly,
too.
Yeah.
Putting it in a kind of white plastic tray in the fields. So who is Narciso?
So Narciso Martinez, he's currently based in Los Angeles, and he immigrated to the U.S. from Oaxaca and worked alongside many of the folks that he depicts in his work in agricultural fields. And that is actually how he put himself through college and through art school. He started making art at a very young age. I listened to a brilliant interview with him where he says that From the age of five, he tried to find whatever material he could to make art on. So what's fascinating about his work is that he's telling his own story, and he's telling the story of countless individuals who, again, are not acknowledged, not recognized. These are folks that we drive past in our car. These are the folks who are gathering the food, picking the food that comes to us at home, in grocery stores, at restaurants, and we often tend not to question who's done the really intense, hard manual labor that has made this produce available to us. What I want to mention about Narciso's work is that there's a real tenderness and love and compassion for these individuals. It's important to him that they're seen as individuals. In some of the cases, as in the one that we are standing in front of now, you don't see the face or the eyes of this woman, but in many of the pieces, you see these generous, open, wide smiles and sparkling eyes, and you know, despite what they are having to go through, the toiling that they do in the fields, in the face of their friend, their peer, Narciso, they have this love to share. And so he's really taken it as his aim to empower these individuals, to lift them up, to credit them, to acknowledge them, to show their humanity. And that's what's so beautiful about his work to me.
It is a beautiful portrait of a human body where you see the woman's weight on her heels, bending her sneakers, and then she's turning partly toward the viewer, and all the wrinkles in the hoodie, and then the way the face is coming to you, but it's totally occluded. It's a very powerful image.
And the one to the right of us is a portrait of Narciso.
Right.
Wearing goggles, he's picking cherries, and it's a much larger piece. So one thing that he has really engaged in is deep conversation, not only with his subjects, but when he travels around LA after markets have closed to collect these old produce boxes, which would end up being detritus, he has conversations with the people that he's gathering them from. And these are folks who wouldn't normally even have the free time or the leisure time to visit a museum, let alone find themselves in a museum. So he has these conversations with these people. You know, like, what are you doing this for? Who is this for? Who's going to see this? And that conversation, that kind of where he humanizes the art world, he humanizes, you know, historically, these are not folks that you've seen on the walls of a museum. When you think of portraiture, you think of white individuals, you think of wealthy individuals, European individuals, not specifically undocumented individuals of color who are doing hard labor. So he is changing this discourse we have about what the museum is and who the museum is for.
In the media room at the back, there's a big screen showing a video and there's a soundtrack. The piece is by Tania Candiani from Mexico, and it's called From the Sound of Labor, Work Singing. And when you go in, step into the space. You can hear the drumming and then the singing. Just tell us a little bit about this work.
Sure. So Tanya is a multidisciplinary artist who really uses so many different approaches to her work, and she's incredibly research-oriented, but she's also very oriented towards community. So this is a series of three videos that came out of a project she did for the Havana Biennial, in which she went to Cuba, and she worked with local individuals, but she also worked with elders from the community to try to recall these songs. So these were songs that were not documented. They were songs that, or had not been previously documented, I should say, that she had to work with folks to bring back, to recreate. So this particular video is shot in certain areas that were very pivotal to the slave labor operation in Cuba, historically speaking.
So it was an oral tradition that had almost died out?
I can't say for sure that it had almost died out, but certainly it wasn't something that had been sought out as of late. So she really, what I find fascinating about her practice is the amount of research that she really does and the care with which she does it.
The same artist, Tanya Candiani, went to... they look like sweatshops. I mean, it's rows and rows of sewing machines, women sewing, and this is in Cuba. Tell us what's going on. There's also a person reading at a microphone in the sewing room.
Yeah, so this is a very, again, historically layered piece. It's not a sweatshop. It's actually a center that was created by Vilma Espín, who was married to Raúl Castro, Fidel Castro's brother, and it was a center that was created for women to learn industrial craft and to basically empower themselves to be able to work and produce for their families. So what we see are rows of predominantly women in middle age or older working at sewing machines, many of which are quite old, and at the front of the room is a woman sitting in a chair reading aloud. She's looking at these women who are also in a factory where they're sort of subverting the idea of mass industrialization of garment production and going back to kind of more traditional, more individual methods of labor. And this overall practice, the sound of labor, I mean, it's the sound of labor is not something that we usually think of isolating and celebrating, but what Tanya has done here is quite profound in the sense that it's looking at a byproduct of labor that is beautiful.
And this is a 2-minute high def video.
Yes. So we have the one projected video and two works on flat screens, and all taking place in Havana, but looking at different facets of labor.
Mm-hmm. The last artist we'll look at is Alberto Lul, and he was in prison, and one of his exhibits is a big kind of pegboard full of, you call them shivs? What do you
shivs,
call
shanks.
Shivs or shanks.
Yeah, sharp weapons.
Things for stabbing people in prison. And, they're little blades, broken glass, mm-hmm. sharpened things. A lot of them are just screwdrivers. I mean, how are they getting hold of screwdrivers?
That's what's interesting. So Alberto was incarcerated for 13 years, and it was during this period of time that he really came to his art practice. And one body of work that he has produced as a result is called Prison Ready-Mades. And so it's looking at the labor taken on by incarcerated individuals to create objects that they need or objects out of necessity. So unfortunately, sharp objects like this used for protection and used for various other things that you can imagine. But using non-traditional materials, I mean, these are certainly not art materials, and they were hard to come by, I'm sure. So he really leaves that question open. I mean, he's exposing elements of the life of an incarcerated individual, but he's really not being didactic in the sense that he needs to lay everything out for us. But what is fascinating about this project is the kind of cycle, the art historical cycle that it takes on as well. You know, he uses the term ready-mades, which was something coined by Marcel Duchamp to question industrialization and commercialization, taking industrially produced objects, literally turning them on their head and calling them art objects. So Duchamp was questioning the voice, the authorship of an artist. Who is an artist? What do they do? And what's interesting is that having taken those really kind of quote-unquote low materials, the work of Duchamp became considered high art in the art historical canon. And then now what Alberto is doing is circling back around and again taking material that we certainly wouldn't consider art, let alone high art, displaying it in a museum and using museum display mechanisms to present these objects. And it really kind of makes the audience question, who is an artist? What does an artist do? What is an art object? But, you know, what I'd like to point out is the tattoo gun. One way that Alberto really came to his artistic practice in prison was through tattoo
he
work.
Was the guy giving tattoos?
He received tattoos and learned how to do tattoos, and he still is a tattoo artist to this day. And we understand now, you know, the importance of tattoos in terms of community building, and certainly if you are gang affiliated, it's a way to kind of show your affiliation. But what we're looking at is basically a Bic mechanical pencil, which has been broken into two, and at the tip of it is a metal needle, and then it is loosely wired to at least two that we can see, but perhaps three AA batteries that are held together by graph paper. And so it's really fascinating to see that out of necessity, what these individuals fashion together to create, there's a sort of foamy rubber heel. It's been cut off a shoe, and in the center of that is a cell phone battery, and that's been wired to a plug in a wall. So that's something that would have mechanized a tattoo gun. So, yeah.
What's this little mystery object? A pair of handcuffs with a kind of black plastic box between them?
I think this is actually a pre-made type of handcuffs. Yeah, shackle that's used for a specific type of restraint.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Alexandra Terry. She is the curator of contemporary art at the New Mexico Museum of Art and the guest curator of Labor of Love, which is on now at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University through April 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Alexandra.
Thank you so much for having me.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart.